Hello everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Quill Podcast. I am your host, and as you can see on your screen right now, we have a lot to talk about. Last time we left off, we left with my grandfather at the end of 1944. To be more precise, somewhere in October, after the bombardment of Cluj, and with Romanian slowly taking pace together with Russians to attack Hungary and to push further back on, you know, the Nazis and, you know, end the war faster. And that meant a lot of effort and a lot of sacrifice. Now, on my grandfather's side of the story, as you can see here, this is the railroad at Cluj, where he lived next to, and of course, he had to run through the hills of Cluj to take shelter from bombs and flying bullets as a 10-year-old. And now, you know, in his third year of going to school, he had to also drop out due to this conflict. But we got here through circumstances, and we have to kind of go back to tell you the broader story. What I told you were just bits and pieces of a much larger story. And considering that this is episode 7, we're over halfway done with this first season of The Quill, and that means we're gonna move slowly towards the end of World War II and towards, well, the communist era. And it's not gonna be a surprise, because we've been slowly building towards that, but to know how we get there, there's gonna be a lot of stuff involved, and that's what we're gonna talk about in this episode. Because I even read a few conspiracy theories where Stalin was like the headmaster behind World War II, you know, like he wanted to start World War II because he wanted to take control over Europe, and he too had a grandmaster plan. It's just that Hitler, you know, started earlier, and he kind of was surprised by all that. Yet in the end, he still kind of managed to get some of his plan done by having such an influence over both in Asia with, for example, China and a few island nations, and of course, you know, in Romania, Bulgaria, Poland, and a few other states in the Eastern Hemisphere of Europe. So, but this didn't just come as a surprise. This was a slow build-up, and the Allies knew that in order to end this war as fast as possible, they had to sacrifice and to give up on some things and to play into their hands, because otherwise you'd just be prolonging the war and having a new enemy in, well, Russia this time, and the war would have been probably gone on for another like 5 to 10 years, because Russia was still Russia and they were still strong, and having armies in Romania, Bulgaria, Poland, and Germany, it it would have been really hard to push back against. And even with nukes, even the Russians weren't far behind with their nuclear development, so you can imagine that if the war would have went on for like 5 years more with the Allies versus the Russians, they would have developed it much, much faster, because of course after Hiroshima and Nagasaki they would have had to, you know, have some leverage against the Allies, not just throw bodies at the problem, obviously, and ammo, because that's usually what, well, it's what the Russians did against obviously the Nazis and the Romanians when with the whole Barbarossa operation. But here we are now. How did Russia get into Romania? Well, the operation was called, I didn't tell you last time, but the operation was called Yash Kishiev, Kishniev. You can even find an article on Wikipedia that is kind of a very nice, like, summed up thing. There it tells you everything you need to know in a few sentences, but I did show you last time videos from even the UK and the US and the Russians with their victory practically after the Allies gave, well, the Russians pressured Romania and gave Romanians an ultimatum to give up, yet they didn't, so of course they entered Romania through Transnistria to what's now the Republic of Moldova, and then into what is now Yash, or Yashi, how it's written on there on that Wikipedia page, and then made their way slowly south and into Bucharest. I showed you videos with Bucharest, with both the Red Army entering Bucharest and the Romanian people celebrating it, and of course with you know, the Communist Party basically taking over Romania. But this wasn't just a mistake, or this was merely planned by both Stalin and Churchill meeting in Kremlin and coming to terms, as the Allies were pushing Nazi Germany back in the West by having regained France and, you know, Belgium and Holland, and with every step forward the victory was clearer and clearer, considering that before even Romania turned, Italy had turned against and surrendered twice, but the second time was for good and Mussolini couldn't escape. So this meant that now with Romania turning against the Germans, that was a huge blow, of course, with the operations in 1943 against the Ploiești oil fields. That was another huge blow done by the Americans to the Romanian oil fields, which helped kind of handicap Nazi Germany. So piece by piece it was coming together, and the Germans were falling back behind more and more. After losing Greece, Yugoslavia and Bulgaria and Romania, you know, things weren't going exactly as they planned. And now with them losing piece by piece, obviously the Allies came together and were already making plans for future Europe. For example, Bulgaria and Romania were very important to Stalin. He insisted that he would want Romania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, Poland, and you know, the rest going up. And but he also would have wanted Greece, but he gave Greece up to the British, so which is why they kind of remained democratic for so long. They didn't fall under his, you know, influence. But that sadly didn't happen for Romania, and Romania didn't have the balls that Yugoslavia had, because Yugoslavia and that Balkan region was already volatile since forever, and somehow due to this volatility it was hard for both Germans to hold that place together, having at one point even Serbians kill Croatians for reasons. Of course, the history there is very complicated and I can't do it justice like this in just a few sentences. So now you have that element of the story. So when the Russians went there after Romania changed sides and Bulgaria wanted to insert their influence there, it didn't really pan out, because as soon as they put someone from their side, they already were thrown out very quickly. So that's kind of fascinating. But this didn't happen in Romania due to multiple factors, and one of them is that after they that whole summer after they got in Romania, they started killing Nazi sympathizers. They captured the higher-ups after King Michael's the first coup. So that was again a very fascinating tale where both due to the fact that Romania was losing in the east to the Russians, and that kind of played well into the hand of King Michael and the distrust in Antonescu and his side. So slowly those tides have had to turn, and they turned in the form of a coup. And we already talked about this a little bit, but when the coup happened, a bunch more things happened. That's why I'm again talking about it, because it wasn't just a simple coup there. There was also the fact that there were people installed already, sympathizers of the Communist Party, and slowly but surely they had infiltrated and made their way towards, you know, taking over Romania. And that was kind of interesting in my opinion, because the way they did it was to take to infiltrate basically already traditional parties and kind of spin off in some sense from them, basically have sympathizers within those parties and then spin off to, you know, create a bigger and bigger set there. But with that said, after, you know, Romania, after the Russians got to Bucharest, to Romania, they basically put up their people, and there were a few people. One of the most noted one is Petru Groza and Gheorghe Tătărescu. That's one of the names. He was Tătărescu, for example, was a former prime minister under Carol II, which ruled from 34 to 37. So, you know, they were already having lots of influence and power there, and but this didn't stop, as I said, due to the fact that Churchill and the Allies basically gave their thumbs up, like, yeah, you can have whatever Iron Curtain you want, set it up, we won't interfere as long as you live, you know, Greece alone and these parts are ours. The rest, Yugoslavia, you fucking deal with it, we don't care what you're doing. But even in Yugoslavia, they somehow managed to get back to the democratic side, and well, that didn't really pan out because it turned into a bunch of wars. But again, not gonna, that's a story for someone else's podcast if they want it. So yeah, with the fact that the Russians got Romania, the fact that Romania changed sides, well, when they changed sides and agreed kind of to work with the Allies, Russia had some very well defined terms for Romania. For once, they were to pay $300 million back in war damages, and, you know, to, well, basically become part of the communist bloc. But the $300 million were to be paid over 6 years, whether it was in goods and whatever else, and also they were to punish the fascist crime lords, basically, which meant Ion Antonescu and the higher ups in what was during the whole period of the war where the Romania was part of the Axis, you know, any leadership, generals, soldiers and stuff like that. So yeah, it was that, and this also kind of gave leeway, as we talked last time, to Russians to actually lawfully kill any sympathizer, so from whoever worked with, you know, Hitler directly, and to the lowest secretary, or just people that were Nazi sympathizers and had some thoughts. So that meant the massacre of a lot of people in a very short span of time. And this didn't just happen in Romania, sadly, this also happened in Bulgaria, this also happened in Poland, this also happened, you know, in other places throughout Europe where the Russians came and set their foot down. But even so, for example, in Poland, they didn't manage to really get their hands on it properly with their own installed government and all that, because they were there were special circumstances there too. So yeah, somehow Romania got a very bad deal in this whole thing with changing sides, because the Allies couldn't give less of a crap about Russia as long as the war was about to end in 6 months, a year soon anyway, and they just had to get to Hitler first because he was a monster, especially since in October they got to Auschwitz and they finally freed the people there. So, you know, by that point Auschwitz was kind of out of the bag and everyone was now people couldn't be willfully ignorant of what he was doing there, because, you know, propaganda is one thing and you doubt propaganda in times of war, but facts like we found millions and millions of bodies and a concentration camp that kills millions and millions of people ain't that nice, and you can't play like dumb about it. So, well, you can try, but that's besides the point. So, you know, once they found out this, it was all out against Germany. And what else? I had one more point kind of to make, that I also made last time, but it doesn't matter. What matters is the fact that Romania had changed sides, they had terms in place, they had money to pay, but Russia did know kind of the bad economic state of Romania, in the bad shape that it was. So with that said, obviously, you know, things were starting to kind of change into worse for Romanians, because besides the bad shape that they were in, economically speaking, now obviously under communism you don't have much freedom of speech, and if you say the wrong thing you might be executed. And many of those higher ups, for example, or sympathizers, were sent into gulags, and we all know how horrible that was too. Because while we condemn, and rightfully so, Germany and Romania and Hungary and many more that took part in the Holocaust and pushed for it, where the Russians weren't clean either in terms of killing Jews and gypsies and any and all nationality that stood against them, and they didn't really have any scruples or, you know, shame in doing it. So, but they always thought to do something, like here in Romania, where they were they forced, basically one of the conditions to join the Axis was, give us all your, you know, Nazi sympathizers and anti-state people, anti-state, anti-communism, basically. And of course that kind of put them into a legal, I really don't know into legality in some way, but in my opinion those two are horrible deeds. And with that said, now we kind of know the beginning of the kind of chokehold that the USSR and Russia had, due to allies, due to their own competency, and due to a lot of people that were basically involved in taking over. And one of the things they did was to slowly like integrate like the police force, the printing press, the radio, the bits and pieces of Romania's economy and power structure. Like by the end of, by 1945, they had a government, and, well, you know, the king was a powerless king, so it wasn't really looking too well with them making their way through all of Romania's hierarchy, trying to grip tight at it and really constrict them. And there were a few people that I already mentioned that were really important in doing so. So yeah, it was still something interesting, honestly, but with that kind of Romania joined Russia in obviously liberating, and Russia was kind enough to say, yeah, we're gonna give you Transylvania back after we take it back, so don't worry about that, we're gonna go and do that. So we all know that after August, in September, the march towards Transylvania started, and slowly they made their way up north and west, taking, you know, bits and pieces. And here is where maps come in play, because look at this. So this is actually a modern Hungarian map that was made by someone, and this is about that Iași, Chișinău, and then the further advancements of the Russian and Romanian army towards north and west, as I said. And here you can kind of see after the Battle of Kishinev, which is Chișinău, after these battles and slowly moving towards Iași, they started moving slowly. You see here, even the dates, 20th of August 1944, and they started moving slowly towards Bucharest, and then they took over Bucharest, obviously, and then you have the movements in a few directions. One is the south, where, you know, you have, for example, here, the Russian army waiting to actually enter Bulgaria, because Bulgaria wouldn't budge. They didn't budge until Romania, until the Russian army, the Red Army, got to Bucharest. And once they got to Bucharest and took over Bucharest, Bulgaria very soon, a month later, followed. So you see here, the 1st of September 1944. So it was something very, very interesting, the way everything kind of came together here. And it's something you just wish, for example, in a, I don't know, a game like Hearts of Iron or some strategy game to happen, you know, where everything you want falls into place. And now, after Bucharest, after Bulgaria capitulated and changed sides too, you have here two movements, with basically going west through Craiova and the south of Romania to fight in Yugoslavia and Hungary. God damn it, I keep saying it in Romanian with kind of an English pronunciation, which is wrong, but whatever. And then we have the path up north from Bucharest, going up north to Ploiești, and slowly going through both attacking Brasov here and going through Câmpulung, Sibiu there, and Târgu Jiu, Hot sick. So Romania and the Russians were hitting from every possible place they could find to kind of infiltrate through the Carpathian mountains. As you can see, even here in Moldova, they were hitting hard towards, Transylvania. Even here, towards Mirgu de Chuc and a few other places. So they answered and slowly made their way up. And slowly the Hungarians retreated, but with every retreat, they would burn down the cities, because as we talked, and by now it's custom, when you retreat, you burn the city or whatever crops and fields, so they don't have much either to gain from it or to, get from it. So after they made their kind of way up there, and started fighting it. This was in September here, this blue line. So in just 10, 11 days, 12, they made their way through Bucharest and they started going up north. So it wasn't really much of a trouble from that perspective, or for the Russians. And I'm also surprised at the pace the Romanian army kind of put itself back together. So by the 1st of September 1944, they would push and fight against the Hungarians and Nazi Germany. So last time we talked, you have this arrow here that goes towards, well, Kolozsvár in Hungarian, or Cluj, which is exactly where we left off with my grandfather, with the battle of and the bombardment of Cluj, which you can see here was quite devastating. And I'm sad I can't really find more photos, because there should be more photos of that bombing, but then again, Romanians didn't really keep track very well of these things, or they usually hide it because of reasons which I don't really understand, but whatever. So with this battle, you had losses, and you had, at least thinking from the perspective of the Romanians that live in Transylvania, you went from, trusting your own king and governments, and suddenly being thrust into the arms of another nation, and it was very unexpected. And it was very traumatic, because the Hungarians did a lot of horrible stuff with the changing and of the names and the murders and the whole package that was set up. And you can't make those up, since even Ion Antonescu, the Romanian general through until 1944, went to Hitler and complained, like, man, the Hungarians are slaughtering Romanians in Transylvania. This is not okay. This shouldn't be happening. We're on the same side. We're fighting against the Bolsheviks. That should be our goal, and our goal shouldn't be to kill and better ourselves like that. Though, of course, the Romanians in the south side of Transylvania weren't any better, and neither were the Romanians, and of course Antonescu himself, that was sending Jews and gypsies and gays to Auschwitz or in east in Moldova and Transnistria, so it and killing them in like prisons and stuff like that. So of course it was just a kind of who can be a bigger dick contest, and that's basically war. And even with the Russians, as I told you, they were killing Romanians, Hungarians, wherever. They didn't care, they did not care. The only thing they cared was their advancements towards west and getting to well, basically Debrecen and then Budapest. But we're also here talking about how the Russians basically grasped Romania by the balls and killed a lot of Romanians in the process to really get a hold of. And even like I told you last time, Romania and this front was successful by the end of 1944. This whole region here, to even after Debrecen, was kind of cleared and won, with Transylvania being given back to Romania. And but it wasn't given back. They were like, just yeah, we're gonna give it back to you. I promise you that, you have that signed paper here, we all agreed that, about that, even UK and the US and France, everyone agrees with that, all the allies agree with that, but I'm gonna keep Transylvania until we take Hungary, until we go through Czechoslovakia, until we go to Austria, through Austria, until we go and get to Germany. So, you know, this of course was kind of unsettling for any Romanians, because who were they gonna live under? Would they suffer the same fate Moldova, the Republic of Moldova, would and will, which is that they got swallowed up whole, like whole, under the USSR. So having all this immense pressure wasn't good, and the Romanians felt it, and so did the king, but he couldn't do anything. The Russian sympathizers were very, very quick on their feet, having and moving at a very, very fast pace, by getting key elements into the Romanian government and getting the high command quickly put in place to, you know, separate already Romania from the West, which by the beginning of 1945 it was a done deal that couldn't be changed in any other way. So obviously when they started shaping in October 9th 1944, the Soviets wanted influence in Romania to be established at 90%. That was crazy. And as I told you, basically they were like very, very knowledgeable about what they were doing, and Stalin was very, very smart, because if there was another attack, for this was his kind of excuse. So in his mind, he was like, okay, we need a curtain, the Iron Curtain, because so no one can ever attack Russia again. Because if they do, we can throw Romania at them, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, we can throw Poland at them, I don't give a damn, but they won't pass through there that easily because they have our support and they have, you know, our military standing, and this obviously was very, very important to him. So when the chance came, he quickly, of course, deployed people like Lucrezio Potrascano, that's his whole name, people like Petru Groza and many, many others to take, you know, over the government. And with this kind of nice plateau, now the Russians were installed in Romania. And with that, we move on to the next beautiful little footage. I think I showed you this before, but this was this is the Romanian Air Force at the assault on Hungary. We have here some quite nice footage. If you're watching us live or on YouTube, if you're listening to us, you can always watch back the footage of Romanian soldiers on these fields, muddy fields, preparing to take off and attack Debrecen, Budapest, and further. It was quite the fascinating thing to kind of witness. Oof. There was a plane crash that just didn't work. They tried to take off, but they went nose diving into the mud, which is kind of hilarious. But yeah, Romania wasn't just gonna be standing idly by now that they changed sides and they got Transylvania back, because Romania was gonna push further west, and Romania got even to Budapest and beyond with their army. But we're gonna talk more in depth about that next episode. So, you know, with all these things happening here at once, with Romania taking back Transylvania, with the change of sides, Romania was still very much not in a good place, and Romanians were really, really suffering, and it's gonna show in a few years, and we're gonna talk about that too. Since we're approaching the end of this season, and we're approaching the end of this podcast too, because we're now 45 minutes in, I'm really thinking that I don't know how my people, like, well, people, my grandfather was a child, he was 10 years old. God, if I remember when I was 10 clearly, and I couldn't give less of a damn about what was happening. Now imagine having to lose your father when you're 5, and bomb after bomb after bullet, being forced to change your family name, being forced to now learn in a foreign language after you've talked for years in a different language, and being punished if you didn't, and then being again bombed and basically afraid of your life because you wouldn't know if you were to survive. So, and not just that, but having to run away from your house because your house is in the path of the bombs and the way of the Russian and Romanian army, and you couldn't know if you could trust them, because by God, even the Romanians did some, and the Russians did some really, really horrible stuff taking back Transylvania, and there are well documented cases, and even Even a movie was made, if I remember right, by the Romanians about what the Russians did in Transylvania. So, you know, there are quite a few horrid cases, and well, it was war, so of course everything was kind of well known and legal, because as I just said, any sympathizers or aiders or helpers or, you know, high commanders were immediately either shot, imprisoned and sent to Gulag, or just sent to prison and awaiting trial, which is what happened, for example, with Ion Antonescu, which wasn't executed until 1946, and I'll show you that if you're nice enough. Because, of course, when it comes to execution of mass murderers, there is a video about that. Just somehow not... well, of course, Hitler killed himself, otherwise we would have had another nice, very, very nice video there, just like with the execution, for example, of Ceausescu out there with millions of views and then conspiracy theories. But with that said, I actually can't imagine how it is, because even thinking about the situation we have right now in the world, where Romania is, for example, in the NATO and the EU, and that kind of calms me down a bit. But it doesn't, because the Russians tried to influence the 2016 elections here in Romania. Yeah, here in Romania too. There are files about that, and you know, Putin did some dumb things to aggress Romania a few times, both over our own airspace and in the Black Sea. So, you know, it isn't really peaceful here either right now, and it smells horrible because of those tensions. But either people choose to ignore it, or, you know, whatever the Americans are doing to protect us, and the allied forces in this case are doing to protect us, is something fantastic. But you know, it's always terrifying. And here in Romania, for some reason, the alarm systems keep going off every month around the date of like 4th or 5th day or every month, they keep going off. And one day, I swear to God, if World War III starts and I'm getting bombed, I wouldn't budge, because now for over 2 years I'm used to these sirens every month. And that's actually a true story. So now imagine just being a 10-year-old boy trying to survive, dropping out of school and just running for your life. That's what was happening. And now also the massive shift in a third shift in like what, a month, because it went from a Nazi regime and also back to a king, and then communism again, but communism, so back to another dictator. It went from dictator to king to dictator, which is absolutely mind-boggling, honestly. And you can imagine the confusion the Romanian peasant must have, because by 1944 and 1945, the majority of the population of Romania, so 80% was peasant. They were peasants working fields, not in cities. Romania had like what, 80 million by back then too. So imagine 18 million and the top five cities each had over 500,000, and the capital, so it one out of, you know, five had over a million and a bit. It's something strange, honestly, to think about the fact that, like, what, 3 million out of 18 were living in cities, because the rest were very, very small cities. So you can put there like a couple more million, and there you have it. That's the whole population, 5-6 million of Romanian at most living in urban environment, and the rest were countrysides and small, very, very small cities. Which is, well, it is fascinating, but it's something, in my opinion. Now, of course, you know, that meant that the confusion must have been terrible to go in 3 months through so many things and not have any real opinion on anything. So of course it was very easy for the Russians, without any interference, without any other people pushing back, because though, just so you know, the moment anyone was trying to push back, they were killed. The moment anyone tried to say anything about anything against the Russians, they were killed. Many of them, like, for example, there was a scientist found at the end of 1944, dead in a forest, and they played it like he killed himself, but he was assassinated because, of course, he wasn't a Nazi sympathizer, he was just against the Communist Party and that communist regime which was about to come. So it was all a goddamn mess, as you can very well imagine. But, well, here we are at the end of this episode. Now you know how the communists basically infiltrated Romania. Now you have a bit more context, as we're gonna finish 1944 for good next time and head into the beginning of 1945, and we're gonna end the war, and then we're gonna tell you about how actually the Russians and the communists finished this whole operation, taking over Romania, and how they installed their first, well, dictator in Gheorghiu Dej, and how a woman like Anna Paucăr was incremental to doing that, because of course women have a very, very big part to play in this too, because it's Romania, and in Romania women kind of always had a little bit of important part. Is just sadly very not very well documented here. But with that said, my name is Raul. I really, really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Quill. If you watched me live, thank you. If you watched me on YouTube, also thank you. If you listened, please rate share and all that fun stuff. Don't forget to read everything I have on raulefort.com. Check out my books on Amazon: Trapped Autumn, Trapped Summer, Trapped Winter, Trapped Spring, all of them in whichever order you want. Though I do recommend Autumn, Spring, Winter and Summer. And that's about it from me. See you next week, and hear you for we'll hear you next week, because it's episode 8 and I can't wait to have fun again and tell you about it. So with that said, see you again next time. Bye bye.